Lesson 5, Section 1, Task 1, An Unpleasant Trip.
Herbert Wilson and his wife went to the Isle of Wight for their summer holiday, but they were by no means pleased with their hotel. As soon as they returned home, Herbert decided to write to the manager of Happy Tours.
Can you spare a moment, dear? I want you to listen to this letter.
Go ahead, then.
Dear sir, my wife and I arrived home last night after a holiday arranged by your firm in Jersey. We stayed at the hotel described in your brochure as a comfortable, medium-sized hotel with a magnificent view of the sea, offering courteous, old-fashioned service and excellent food served in a relaxed, friendly atmosphere.
Yes, that's what the brochure said.
In fact, the hotel is situated at least half a mile from the sea. Our room overlooked a car park,
through the gates of which motor vehicles were constantly arriving or departing.
Yes, that's good. The food was strictly beef burgers and chips or fish and chips. Wine was available, but at exorbitant prices. And as for the courteous old-fashioned service, the majority of the staff were foreign and virtually incapable of speaking or understanding the English language.
Yes, that's quite true.
In addition to this, we were most unhappy with the arrangements for our journey home. We were instructed to catch the 11 a.m. ferry.
Wasn't it 12?
No, 11. But this was apparently delayed, and we did not get away till 6 o'clock in the evening. Now that our holiday is over, it seems fairly pointless writing this letter. But I should like you to know that we were most disappointed with the hotel and travel arrangements and shall certainly not be booking any future holidays through Happy Tours. Yours faithfully, Herbert Wilson.
Yes, dear. That's a very good letter.
Task 2. At the travel agency.
Miss Bush is talking to a travel agent in London.
Good morning. Can I help you? Hello. My name's Miss Bush. I'm intending to go to a conference in Sydney for 3 weeks.
I see. Do you want the excursion fare or the full return fare?
Now, can I get a stopover on an excursion fare?
Yes. You're allowed only one stopover on the excursion fare.
Only one?
Yes. But, of course, if you pay the full return fare, then you can have unlimited stopovers.
Oh, that's much better. Yes, you see, the thing is that I've got 2 weeks' holiday after the conference, and I've never been out that way before at all, mm-hmm. to Australia or the Far East.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to go, you know, shopping or
yes.
seeing Hong Kong or India or somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
Where exactly can I go?
Well, lots of places. There's Singapore or Tehran, Kuwait, Athens.
Mm.
You've really got quite a lot of choice, you know.
Mm. Well, it sounds marvellous. How much would that cost? How much is the full fare?
The full fare? Well, that's really quite a lot. It's £1,204.
Yes, £1,204. Well, it's once in a lifetime. You know, I've never been.
Mm.
The thing is, actually, that I'm absolutely terrified of flying.
Yeah.
I've never done it before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that I can persuade my two friends who are also going to the conference to stop mm. over with me on the way back.
Yes, that would be a good idea, yes.
Mm. Yes. By the way, one of them's in Cairo at the moment. Would it be possible for me to stop over there on my way to Sydney?
Yes, of course. There are plenty of flights to Cairo and then plenty more onwards from Cairo to Sydney. And then you can stay there in Cairo for as long as you like.
Oh, that's great. Now, the thing is, I think I'd better go and persuade Mr. Adams that, you know, he'd like to stop with me in Cairo.
I see.
Go and discuss it with him and then come back to you in a day or two, if that's
yes,
all right.
Yes, certainly. Of course, madam.
Oh, thank you very much. Okay, goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Section 2. A Saturday Afternoon.
Gillian felt slightly uneasy as the porter unlocked the gates and waved her through. St. Alfred's Hospital was not an ordinary mental institution. It was the most exclusive institution of its type in the country. You had to be not only mentally ill, but also extremely wealthy to be accepted as a patient. She parked her car outside the main entrance of the imposing 18th century building. She paused on the steps to look at the superb ornamental gardens and surrounding parkland. An old man in a white Panama hat was watering the flower bed beside the steps. He smiled at her.
Good afternoon, miss. A lovely day, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is.
Are you a new patient?
Oh, not a patient. I'm just here to do some research.
Will you be staying long?
I really don't know. I wonder if you could direct me to Dr. Carmichael's office.
Certainly, miss. Just go through the main door, turn left, walk down to the end of the corridor, and it's the last door on the right.
Thank you very much indeed.
Dr. Carmichael was waiting for her. He had been looking forward to meeting his new research assistant. He himself had always been interested in the special problems of long-stay patients. Dr. Carmichael was very proud of his hospital, and she was impressed by the relaxed and informal atmosphere. She spent the mornings interviewing patients and the afternoons writing up the results of her research in the gardens. Some of the patients were withdrawn and depressed. Some seemed almost normal. Only one or two had to be kept locked up. She found it hard to believe that all of them had been thought too dangerous to live in normal society. She often saw the old man in the Panama hat. He spent most of his time working in the gardens, but he always stopped to speak to her. She found out that his name was Maurice Featherstone. He was a gentle and mild-mannered old fellow, with clear blue, honest eyes, white hair, and a pinkish complexion. He always looked pleased with life. She became particularly curious about him, but Dr. Carmichael had never asked her to interview him, and she wondered why. One night at dinner, she asked about Mr. Featherstone.
Yes, Maurice. Nice old chap. He's been here longer than anybody.
What's wrong with him?
Nothing. His family put him here 35 years ago. They never come to visit him, but the bills are always paid on time.
But what has he done?
Oh, I'll show you his file. It seems that he burnt down his school when he was 17. His family tried to keep the incident quiet. Over the next few years, there were a number of mysterious fires in his neighborhood, but the family did nothing until he tried to set fire to the family mansion. He was in here the next day. Morris never protested.
And that was 35 years ago?
I'm afraid so. If I'd had my way, I'd have let him out years ago.
But he can't still be dangerous.
No. He's had plenty of opportunities. We even let him smoke. If he'd wanted to start a fire, he could have done it at any time.
Gillian was shocked by the story. She became determined to do something about it. She wrote letters to Morris's family, but never received a reply. He had never been officially certified as insane, and legally he could leave at any time. Dr. Carmichael was easily persuaded to let her talk to Maurice.
Maurice, have you ever thought about leaving this place?
No, miss. I'm very happy here. This is my home. And anyway, I've got nowhere to go.
But wouldn't you like to go into the village sometimes? To walk around? To buy your own tobacco?
I've never thought about it, miss. I suppose it would be nice. But I wouldn't want to stay away for long. I've spent 20 years working on this garden. I know every flower and tree. What would happen to them if I weren't here?
Gillian realized that it would be unkind to make him leave the hospital. However, she found out that the next Saturday was his birthday. She arranged with the staff to give him a party. They wanted it to be a surprise, and Dr. Carmichael agreed to let him go out for the afternoon. There was a flower show in the village. Maurice left at 2 o'clock. He seemed quite excited. They expected him to return about 4 o'clock. The cook had made a birthday cake, and the staff had decorated the lounge. Gillian was standing in the window when she saw him. He was early. He was walking up the drive towards the house, whistling cheerfully. Behind him, above the trees, several thick black columns of smoke were beginning to rise slowly into the clear blue sky.
Section 3. Part 1. Learning to predict.
1. The student, puzzled about a particular point, decides to ask a question. As so often happens when under pressure, he tends to concentrate most on his attention on the subject matter, and he pays practically no attention to the language. Consequently...
Pause.
He fails to employ the correct question form. 2.
However, even though the student does employ an appropriate question form...
Pause.
Difficulties may still arise.
3. The basic difficulty may, in fact, be one of several different types. It may lie in the student's limited oral perception. In other words...
Pause.
The student may not have clearly heard what was said. 4.
Learners of English have, for example, said to me such things as, "See me here tomorrow," or "Explain this." Fortunately, as I deal with non-native speakers and as I understand their language problems, I interpret this as inadequacy in the language rather than rudeness. Other teachers, however...
Pause.
...may feel angry at receiving such orders.
5. Today I'm going to consider, very briefly, a problem concerned with the competition for land use. That is...
Pause.
...whether crops should be used to produce food or to... should be used to produce fuel. 6.
A particularly interesting possibility for many developing countries has been the conversion of plant material to alcohol. This is interesting because in many developing countries there is a large agricultural sector and, at the same time...
Pause.
...a small industrial sector.
Task 2. Dictation.
The school holidays are too long.
Today, the children of this country have at last returned to work. After 2 months' holiday, pupils have started a new term. How many adults get such long holidays? Two to 4 weeks in the summer and public holidays. That's all the working man gets. As for the average woman, she's lucky to get a holiday at all. Children don't need such long holidays. In term time, they start work later and finish earlier than anyone else. In the holidays, most of them get bored and some get into trouble. What a waste. If their overworked parents were given more free time instead, everyone would be happier. This isn't just a national problem either. It's worldwide. Dates may be different from country to country, but the pattern's the same. Why should children do half as much work and get twice as much holiday as their parents?